So you're fascinated by the Grand Odalisque. I get it. This painting, it's got mysteries for days. It's famous. It's in the Louvre, but it's also got this whole, like, wait, is that back okay thing going on?
And that's just the tip of the iceberg. What's so captivating about the Grand Odalisque is that it throws open these huge doors on artistic movements and changing beauty standards and how we view the female form in art all in one canvas.
Okay, so let's unpack this. For those who, need a refresher, we're talking about the masterpiece by Jean-Auguste Dominique Ingres, painted back in 1814. It caused a stir from the moment it was unveiled, right?
Absolutely. To fully appreciate why, we need to understand the artistic scene at the time. Ingres was working during the height of neoclassicism, a movement obsessed with order, symmetry, all things ancient Greece and Rome.
Huh.
Think clean lines, noble subjects, that kind of thing.
Right.
But Ingres, he had other ideas. He was drawn to romanticism, which was all about emotion, exoticism, and pushing boundaries.
And that's where our odalisque comes in. But I've got to ask, this whole reclining nude thing, it wasn't exactly new in 1814, was it?
Not at all. Ingres was definitely looking back in time for inspiration. You can see echoes of Giorgione's Dresden Venus and Titian's Venus of Urbino in the way he positions the Odalisque. Those Renaissance masters were all about that sensual reclining pose.
So he's riffing on a classic theme, but then there's that twist you mentioned.
Here's where it gets really interesting. While those Renaissance paintings influenced him, the Grand Odalisque's specific pose, that over-the-shoulder gaze, the way she's reclining it, actually comes from a much more contemporary piece. Jacques Olivier's A Portrait of Madame Récamier, painted just 14 years earlier.
Now that you mention it, I totally see it. But it's like he took that formal portrait pose and like draped it in silks and mystery. He's playing with our expectations, right? Formal portrait meet seductive odalisque.
Exactly. And that's classic Ingres. He was a master of taking something familiar and giving it this intriguing, often unsettling twist.
Yeah.
And nowhere is that more evident than in the anatomical debate that still surrounds this painting.
Oh, yeah. We can't avoid the elephant, or should we say, the elongated odalisque in the room, those proportions. Even back in 1814, critics were saying, ouch.
To put it mildly, they were scandalized.
Yeah.
There were comments about how the Grand Odalisque had neither bones nor muscle, neither blood nor life, nothing that constitutes imitation. Ouch is right.
Five extra vertebrae will do that to a girl's reputation.
It's true. And it wasn't just her spine. The pelvis is rotated in a way that's physically impossible, and even her arms are different lengths.
Wait, back up a sec. Five extra vertebrae, as in he actually painted in extra bones.
That's what the analysis indicates. It wasn't a mistake or, a stylistic flourish. Ingres deliberately distorted her anatomy, which begs the question, why?
Okay, so we've established Ingres knew what he was doing anatomically, but that just makes the question even bigger. Why make those choices? Especially during a time when anatomical accuracy was such a big deal for artists. What was he trying to say?
Yeah, it's definitely not as simple as, Ingres just taking artistic liberties or having like a whimsical day with his paintbrush.
Yeah.
We're talking about the female body in art, a subject loaded with expectations, especially in the 19th century. Ingres was playing with those expectations, maybe even commenting on them.
Okay, so this is where it gets really interesting for me. So are we saying this strangely proportioned back is actually like some kind of statement?
It's a theory some art historians have put forward.
Yeah.
And it's pretty compelling when you think about it. Let's unpack the idea of objectification a bit, because it's key here. For centuries, the female body in art was often idealized, tailored to the male gaze, basically presented as an object of desire for men.
Right.
Ingres, by exaggerating certain features of the odalisque, especially her back and pelvis, could be highlighting how distorted that gaze can be.
So it's like he's saying, you want to see women as objects, fine, but I'm going to make you confront the absurdity of that viewpoint.
Exactly. It's
Yeah.
subversive, even a little bit defiant, and it's made even more complex when you consider her gaze, which is something I've always found fascinating about this painting. She's not looking at the viewer, she's turned away, almost lost in her own thoughts. There's a distance there, a
Yeah.
disconnect between how her body is presented and what her expression suggests.
Right. Her body is on display, but her mind, her inner self, is like somewhere else entirely. It's like those two things can't exist in the same space.
Precisely. And that complexity is what elevates the Grand Odalisque beyond just a beautiful painting. It's asking questions about how we look at women, how women's bodies are used, and even about the very nature of desire.
Okay. So Ingres was making a statement pushing boundaries. But did other artists catch on? Was there a sudden wave of strangely proportioned odalisks taking the art world by storm?
Well, not exactly a wave of elongated backs, but the Grand Odalisque's influence was undeniable. Some artists paid homage through direct copies, like Jules Flandrin's version at the Ingres Museum. It shows how much respect Ingres commanded, even if others weren't quite ready to be as daring with their anatomy lessons.
Sure, because copying is flattering, but then there are artists who took Ingres' work and really went for it, right? Reimagined the whole thing.
Absolutely. And we're not talking subtle nods. We're talking bold reinterpretations that both celebrate and challenge the original. Take Marshall Reyes, for example. In 1964, he did this pop art twist on the Grand Odalisque, incorporating all this junk jewelry, almost turning her into a commentary on consumerism.
Wow. From object of desire to object of consumerism, that's quite the journey. It's like he's saying, you think she's a possession? Well, so is all this stuff.
Right. And then you have Herman Braun Vega, a Peruvian artist who took the Grand Odalisque and brought her into a whole new cultural context. In his 1985 painting, Pourquoi pas eux, she's surrounded by Peruvian children.
Interesting. So is that about democratizing art, challenging the idea that these classical masterpieces belong to one specific culture or class?
I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
But Braun Vega doesn't stop there. In 2010, he revisits the Grand Odalisque again in La Ronde, au Crépuscule, au Bord du Pacifique, this time placing her alongside nudes by Matisse and Picasso, all in this, like, vibrant, surreal landscape.
He's creating a dialogue then, pulling together these different artists' styles, even centuries, and having them all share the same space. It's like he's saying, these conversations about art, about the body, they're not limited to one time or place.
Exactly. And speaking of bold reinterpretations,
We
have to talk about the appropriation that really took the cake. The Gorilla Girls.
Oh, yeah. Those, like, feminist art ninjas. They were never afraid to make a statement. How did they use the Grande Odalisque? They didn't just use it. They, like, turned it into a whole critique of the art world itself, right?
Exactly. In their iconic 1989 poster, you see the Grande Odalisque, but she's wearing a gorilla mask, which was like their signature move.
Mm-hmm.
And the text below her asks this really pointed question. Do women have to be naked to get into the Met Museum?
And they weren't just being provocative. They had the stats to back it up.
Right. They did this whole thing called the weenie count, where they tallied up the number of nude female figures compared to, you know, clothed women and men in the Met's collection. The results were pretty shocking, and their poster called attention to that imbalance in a way that was impossible to ignore. It even got banned from NYC buses for being too suggestive, which is kind of hilarious when you think about it.
Too suggestive. They're using a classical nude to point out how women are often reduced to their bodies, and that's what gets deemed inappropriate. Mm-hmm. Classic. It really shows how the Grande Odalisque continues to, like, spark debate even today.
It really does. And I think that's the mark of a true masterpiece. It's not just a pretty picture. It has this power to make us think, to challenge our assumptions and keep those conversations going across generations.
From Napoleon's sister, who commissioned it, to those scandalized 19th century critics, to modern day feminist art collectives, the Grande Odalisque has been making waves for centuries.
Exactly. And through it all, she keeps gazing out at us with that enigmatic expression holding her secrets close. You know, she invites us to look deeper, to question what we think we know about beauty, about how we represent the female form, and maybe even about the very act of looking itself.
We started this deep dive talking about back problems, but wow, it turns out there's so much more to uncover beneath the surface of this painting. Ingres was clearly playing with fire, taking these classical ideas about beauty and twisting them into something completely new.
And maybe even a little dangerous. After all, when you challenge the way people are used to seeing things, when you present them with an odalisque whose back seems to defy the laws of nature, you're bound to provoke a reaction.
And over 200 years later, the Grande Odalisque, she's still provoking. So the next time you see this painting, don't just look at it, really see it. Ask yourself, what is it about this work that continues to fascinate and challenge us? What do you see in that enigmatic gaze? Maybe Ingres is still a step ahead of us, still asking those tough questions about art, about bodies, and about the very gaze that tries to possess them.